Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents An Amish Cinderella by Shelley Shepherd Gray. Narrated by Tavia Gilbert. He will teach us his ways, so we will walk in his paths. Isaiah chapter 2, verse 3. Seeing ourselves as others see us wouldn't do much good. We wouldn't believe it anyway. Amish proverb. Chapter 1. December. Apple Creek, Ohio. At last it was December. Though Hart Beachy loved Christmas and all the festivities and traditions surrounding the birth of Jesus, she didn't care for the month all that much. As far as she was concerned, December was usually too busy, too filled with overblown expectations for the big day, and too cold. Gazing at the clouds outside the kitchen window, at the way the gray skies seemed to cast a dull pall over the dormant plants and shrubs in the nearby flower beds, she almost wished it was January. At least in January, the ground was usually covered in a thick blanket of snow. The fluffy white powder looked clean and bright. Plus, the frigid January temperatures encouraged folks to stay inside and relax. She would dearly love a day or two to relax. Unfortunately, since it was 43 degrees and there wasn't a patch of snow in sight, today would be a different story. She turned away from the dreary landscape. Grabbing a dishcloth, she began wiping down the counters and tried to think of brighter things. Soon everyone in Apple Creek would be looking forward to building snowmen, gathering for Advent, and displaying Christmas cards. Neighbors would be wrapping presents and baking cookies, just like in years past. Or, for those blessed to be in love, perhaps they'd go on a sleigh ride, complete with bells and ribbons on the sleigh and a prancing horse. Couples could glide down the lane, snug in warm blankets, or in each other's arms. It would be perfect. Hart Beachy pressed a hand to the glass pane and dreamed about doing such things. If she had an outing planned with a handsome suitor, she'd make a new dress for it. Perhaps a cozy wool dress in a deep shade of cranberry. Her mother used to say that shades of red complemented Hart's blue eyes and blonde hair nicely. "Nay, ma'am didn't say that," Hart murmured out loud. What she actually said was, "Hazel, I do like you in red. It sets off your beautiful blue eyes." Remembering how much she'd love to hear her mother's sweet words, Hart smiled. Her mother always had encouraging words of praise for her only child. On the heels of that good memory was a far less appealing one. It never failed to make her cringe, but Hart forced herself to remember it as well. Because instead of hugging her ma'am for making her feel special and good, all she'd ever done was scowl and state that she hated her name and wanted to be called Hart instead. Though her words had been true, after all, who really wanted to be named Hazel? Hart wished she'd held her tongue. Ugh, but she'd been such a spoiled child, such a willful little girl. It was no wonder that at least two afternoons a week, ma'am would send Hart out to go help her dad in his blacksmith workshop. The barn had been hot and filled with dangerous things, but her father had never seemed to mind her being with him. He'd given her a little chair in the corner and small tasks to do. Looking around the kitchen, that was exactly the way her mother had originally organized it 25 years ago. She felt the same sense of loss she always did around this time of year. Her mother had died on November 30th, 4 years ago. Ma'am, so sweet and pretty and bright, had died just weeks after contracting the flu. No doctor could give a reason why her mother hadn't survived. She just hadn't. All Hart knew was that Katie Beachy's passing had left a hole in the house that neither her husband nor her daughter had been able to fill. Not that either of them had ever tried. Hart knew that if she had just one more day with her mother, she'd be so happy. She'd tell her just how much she loved her, how grateful she was to have such a sweet and loving ma'am. But of course, wishes and dreams were for other folks. It seemed that so much of what she'd asked for was never going to come true. Maybe the Lord had decided that she already had enough for any young woman. Before her dark thoughts descended deeper, the back door just off the kitchen opened with a rough clack.
Hart, you have dinner on the table yet?
Dad called out as he bypassed the stationary tub next to the door and tromped into the kitchen. She felt like pointing to the kitchen clock above the door. She served her father's midday meal at 11 o'clock sharp every day, always. Her father had come in too early. Not yet. I'll have it out soon.
When?
She rolled her eyes. In 7 minutes, Dad, when it's 11. He scowled.
It ain't ready early?
Nope.
Hart.
Her father had a deep, almost scratchy voice. That voice, combined with the fact that he was over 6 feet tall and a very muscular 250 pounds, made him an imposing presence. She'd seen some men almost cower when he asked them a direct question. Actually, most people tended to give him a wide berth. He might be a very good blacksmith and a rather famous welder, but he wasn't much for company. She, on the other hand, was well used to the way he barked questions and glowered at his surroundings. He wasn't a mean man, not at all. It was more like the Lord had given him so many gifts working with hot metals that he hadn't seen the need to give Levi Beachy too many softer qualities. She, like her mother, was well used to his bark. No sense in complaining, Dad. Your midday meal will be ready when it's ready, and that will be at 11. When he started to complain, she added a bit cheekily, "Hold your horses." His eyebrows snapped together, but he didn't erupt. Instead, he simply exhaled.
Fine. I'm gonna wash up.
Donka. He turned and walked down the hall to the bathroom. He always made that walk, even though the stationary tub was right next to the back door, and it contained his favorite scrubbing soap and fluffy hand towels. And there was a sink in the kitchen, too. Nope, he always insisted on making that trek, all while keeping on his dirty boots. No matter how many times she'd asked him to remove them, he didn't listen. Not even when she explained how dirty they got her freshly swept floor, or how stained his hands made the pristine guest bathroom sink. He'd always looked mystified about why a messy floor should concern him. Knowing that some things would never change, she pulled out two bowls and silverware, then decided to switch things up a bit. Maybe for once she'd wait to eat until later. Maybe after she went for a walk or something. Carefully, she spooned a hearty portion of shepherd's pie into his bowl. Ground beef mixed with fresh vegetables and thick gravy. The top layer of mashed potatoes was golden brown. She'd just placed his dish on the table when her father returned. His eyes lit up, and he took his chair.
Ah, Hart, you do have a way with meat and potatoes.
This was high praise from her father, but as compliments went, it left a lot to be desired. Danke, Dad. After placing his napkin in his lap, Mam had trained her father well in the basics of table manners, he looked at the empty space in front of her.
Where's your food?
I decided to wait to eat. A line formed between his brows.
Why?
I'm not too hungry. Besides, the temperature isn't too cold today. I was thinking that I might go on a walk.
Good thinking. It's nice to get out of the house.
After her father bowed his head in silent prayer, he dug in. Hart sipped her water and mentally planned out the rest of her day. Most of the supper preparations were done, so after she returned from her walk, she could relax in the living room and maybe even work on a sewing project, or begin work on her father's Christmas cards. He sent each of his clients a card. Well, she did. There were almost 200 of those to address. Several minutes passed before he spoke again.
Where are you going to walk to?
I'm not sure. His gaze settled on hers.
You planning on visiting some of the neighbors?
Maybe. She hadn't really planned to visit anyone, but it was an idea.
Mary Miller ain't far. Maybe you could check on her. She's got puppies, I heard.
Hart enjoyed Mary's company. She was easy to be around and usually in a good mood. Puppies were an added bonus. I hadn't heard about the pups.
I'll definitely have to go see them. Did her golden have the litter? He nodded. His blue eyes, the one thing she'd inherited from him, brightened.
I don't know anyone whose day wouldn't be made better by visiting a mess of golden retriever pups.
She smiled back at him. You are right about that.
Since you've been thinking about getting some work pet-sitting, you ought to stop by and see them. Maybe offer to give Mary a hand.
He took another bite.
If you have time, that is.
Mary Miller's husband had passed away when Hart was just a child. To everyone's surprise, she'd never remarried. Instead, she seemed to enjoy her job, which was helping to care for elderly and ailing folks around the area. She usually brought her golden retriever with her and stayed in homes for weeks until her patient recovered or passed on to heaven. She'd helped Hart's mam years ago as well. Knowing her father had a soft spot for Mary, Hart nodded. I can make time to help Mary. Donka for the idea, Dad.
It was nothing. Just be home by 3 o'clock.
Why?
Someone's coming over who I want you to meet.
This conversation was getting curiouser and curiouser. Her father did blacksmithing and ironworks for lots of people, but none of them were of much interest to Hart. Actually, Dad seemed to prefer that his customers stay away from her. Who's coming over? She asked. Her father looked almost smug.
You'll see. Just be home by 3.
Looking around the kitchen, he added,
And maybe you could make some of your monster cookies?
He sounded so hopeful, she hid a smile. Her father might be several inches over 6 feet and built like a linebacker on a football team, but he had a soft spot for her special oversized cookies. He had no idea that making them took no time at all. Yeah, Dad, I'll be happy to make those.
Goot.
He scooted back his chair and strode to the door. It slammed behind him, leaving behind a trail of dirt. The right thing to do would be to eat her meal, sweep the floor, make the cookies, and wash the dishes. But she needed a break, and wanted to enjoy at least an hour outside before she returned to all her chores. Pleased with her decision, Hart covered the pie with some waxed paper, set it in the fridge, and walked out the door. She might be a 25-year-old spinster, but she wasn't without a backbone. Chapter 2
Hart, what a nice surprise, Mary Miller exclaimed when she opened her door. What brings you here today?
My father mentioned that you had a litter of new puppies. I wondered if I could see them.
Mary's face turned into a wreath of smiles. Yes, indeed. They're tiny now and still have their eyes closed, but Virginia knows you, she added over her shoulder as she led the way to the living room. She won't mind you visiting.
How many pups did she have?
5.
Mary's dark brown eyes fairly glowed with happiness.
5 puppies? That's wonderful, Goot. Virginia is tired, but pleased, I think.
Crouching down to the large wooden box with a blanket for Virginia and shredded paper for the pups, Hart gasped. As puppies were wont to do, they were piled all on top of each other and fast asleep.
Oh, Mary, they are adorable. Indeed they are. A litter of puppies is surely one of God's sweetest blessings.
Reaching down, Mary gently rubbed the mother dog's head.
You did a good job, Virginia. It's a family to be proud of.
Bahund thumped her tail twice, just as several puppies woke from their slumber, squeaked, and then started rooting for sustenance.
Hart sighed. They truly are miracles, ain't so?
To be sure.
You'll have to come back often to see how they grow. Before you know it, they'll be scampering everywhere and causing trouble.
Yeah, but they'll be so cute, I doubt you'll mind. Are you going to keep any of them?
I'm afraid not. The puppies will bring me a good price. The money will be a nice addition to my savings account.
I understand. Hart stayed a few more minutes, but knew it was time to go home. She was getting hungry, plus there were treats to make before her father's mysterious guest arrived. Just as she was about to leave, she caught sight of a cage in the corner.
What's that? Hmm? Oh, that spike!
Hart walked closer and was startled to realize it was a pure, white, rather stout rat.
Mary, why do you have a rat in your living room? And why does it have a name?
Well, the last woman I cared for passed away suddenly. She'd been a teacher or some such. This was her class's pet rat.
I see.
Of course, she didn't see at all. Obviously reading her mind, Mary chuckled.
Spike isn't a sewer rat. He's a domesticated one.
I didn't know there was such a thing.
Oh, yeah. Rats are popular pets. He's smart, cuddly, and a good companion. When I realized what her awful family planned to do to him, which was chop off his head, I couldn't let him stay.
Though Hart had never thought about keeping a rodent as a pet, she sure didn't like that idea either.
That's horrible.
What was sad was the inhumane way they were going to dispose of him. Her voice lowered. He'd never done a thing to them either. I was so upset I took him home.
Good for you.
Unable to help herself, she shivered.
Poor thing.
He's a good pet, for sure and for certain. Spike knows his name, and when I let him out of the cage, he never goes far. Most of the time, he simply crawls onto my lap while I read. He really is a sweetheart.
Mary sighed. The only problem is that I don't know what I'm going to do with him now.
You don't want a pet rat?
I'm going to watch another patient starting on Monday. When I broached the subject of maybe bringing Spike and keeping him in his cage in my room, everyone in my patient's family had a fit. Why, one of the man's daughters said that he likely carried rabies.
Hart knew next to nothing about pet rats, but the daughter's words did seem rather harsh.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. That conversation just happened this morning. My neighbor has offered to watch Virginia and the pups for a few days, but he won't have the rat.
Hart took a longer look at Spike. He stared back. A lump formed in her throat. The little rat was studying her, almost with a look of longing. He needed a home.
She certainly had that.
I'll take him, she blurted.
Mary turned away from the rodent and gaped at her.
What?
I'll give Spike a home. I mean, if you don't mind.
Are you sure you want him?
Absolutely.
But what about your father? I mean, won't Levi be upset?
Hart was surprised that Mary knew her father's first name. But that was silly. Of course she did. Apple Creek was a small community, and both of their families had lived there for some time. Hoping she sounded more confident than she actually was, she said,
"My father won't be upset at all. I'll keep Spike in my room. Plus, Dad is usually out in his workshop. He'll probably forget that there's even a rat living in our house."
At least she hoped that was the case. Leaning down a bit, she carefully stuck a finger through the cage and gave Spike a tiny pet. Mary clasped her hands together.
Hart, if you could give this rat a good home, I'd be so grateful.
Consider it done.
What does Spike eat?
Hurrying over to a cabinet in her kitchen, Mary pulled out a plastic container.
Here's all of Spike's things. He loves his chew toys, and the roll of paper towels is so he can make a cozy nest.
As she put all the items into a canvas bag, she added, "Rats are mighty clean, so be sure to change the shredded paper every week. Make sure his water bottle has fresh water, too. Now, to eat, he likes rat pellets and fresh fruit and vegetables."
Smiling at the little creature, Mary softened her voice. "He especially loves strawberries."
"Spike loves strawberries?" She never would have guessed that.
"He enjoys being held and cuddling on your lap, too. But it might take a while for him to warm up to you enough to do that."
Spike was beginning to sound far more personable. and harder to keep hidden than she'd realized.
Okay.
Mary chuckled. If you have questions, you know where to come. I'll help you as much as I can. I'll keep that in mind. Thinking of her chores, and that Spike was going to need to be cared for a bit, she stood up. I think I should probably get on my way now. It could have been her imagination, but Mary looked rather eager for Hart to be on her way. There's a handle at the top of his cage. It's not heavy. Next thing Hart knew, she was headed back home with a canvas bag on her shoulder and a rat cage in her arms. She was already regretting her decision, but consoled herself that a future pet sitter needed to have at least one pet at home. I hope we'll become fast friends, Spike, she muttered. I also hope and pray that you'll be easy to take care of. Unfortunately, the rat didn't squeak in reassurance. Instead, she reckoned the little guy looked rather tense and worried. And that was all she needed to know. Spike had lost his owner, and now Mary. No doubt he was afraid she was going to be of the same mind as the terrible relatives and murder him. You and I are going to get along just fine, she said. All you have to remember is that if my dad ever does realize you're in the house, he probably isn't going to be too happy about it. Don't worry, though. He can sound gruff, but his bark is worse than his bite. As she walked up her driveway, her heart sank. Her father was standing in front of the house, talking to a young man with brown hair. Both turned to her as she approached. Inwardly, she sighed. It seemed her father's surprise guest had arrived. And of course, he was as handsome as could be. He and her father were both staring at Spike's cage, as if it was about to combust. It seemed her secret pet rat wasn't much of a secret anymore. Chapter 3. All things considered, Clayton's first 30 minutes in the company of the famous Levi Beachy were nothing like he'd expected. Levi was known far and wide in the blacksmithing and ironworks world. Not only could he easily shoe a horse in record time, he excelled at producing true works of art. Some of the pieces he'd created had sold for thousands of dollars. People as far away as San Francisco commissioned pieces from him. Moreover, much to everyone's amazement, each client went to Levi's workshop to pick up the piece of art themselves. Clayton's mentor, Garrett, had given him a great deal of advice while they were waiting for an English driver to pick him up and take him to Levi's workshop. Garrett had even cautioned Clayton to be respectful and do his best to listen well and not to get discouraged too fast. That advice had only made Clayton feel more uneasy. In addition to being a master craftsman, Levi was also known to be impatient and have quite a caustic tongue. Even though Clayton hadn't been there long, he believed that the formidable man's reputation seemed to be right on the money. He was gruff, looked at his new apprentice as if he was an idiot, and acted as if simply being in the same room as Clayton was an inconvenience. So that had been nerve-wracking. However, on a positive note, Levi wasn't mean, and the projects he was working on fairly took Clayton's breath away. But then things had gotten strange real fast. After muttering something about cereal treats, Levi took him into the house. Curious about what the man could possibly be talking about, Clayton had followed him out of the barn and across the driveway to the house. After telling Clayton that there was no need to remove his boots, they walked inside. The first stop was the kitchen, of course. It looked the way he'd always imagined his mother's kitchen would be. Dishes in the sink, towels on the counter, and the makings of the midday meal next to the stove. Looking perplexed, Levi drew to a stop and frowned. Then he stared at Clayton. As seconds passed and it was obvious that Levi was waiting for something, Clayton blurted the only thing he could think of.
It's a right nice kitchen. Nee, it ain't. It's a mess.
The man looked so confused, Clayton kept talking. For some reason, he had decided to stick up for the kitchen, even though he had very little experience with either kitchens or cleaning them.
It looks fine to me. Nothing out of the ordinary.
Levi's irritated look swung back to him.
It's out of the ordinary for this house, he barked. And where's Hart?
Clayton had no idea what he was talking about, so he just shrugged.
Hart! Levi yelled. Hart! Where are you?
When several seconds passed, Clayton began to wonder if a comment was expected.
Hart doesn't seem to be here, he said at last.
Levi turned to face him and blinked.
Let's go back outside. Maybe she's working in the hen house.
As they walked back outside, Clayton thought he was finally putting two and two together.
Your wife's name is Hart? No, my wife isn't here. I see.
Of course, he didn't. When the door closed behind them and they were standing on the gravel drive, Levi spoke again.
My daughter's name is Hart.
Ah, well, that is unusual.
We didn't name her that. Her real name is Hazel.
Clayton was beginning to feel as if he'd stepped into the middle of a very strange game. One where Levi Beachy spoke in spurts and incomprehensible phrases, and he was supposed to discern their meanings.
Hazel?
When Levi raised his eyebrows, obviously looking for more of a response, Clayton shoved his hands in his pockets.
Ah.
That seemed to be all Levi needed.
Hazel is a good name. It's solid and normal.
He frowned.
The girl didn't care for it much, though. Named herself Hart, and there was no going back.
Given the man's forceful personality, Clayton was stunned that the girl had gotten her way.
I see. Ah, it is what it is, you know.
Putting both hands on his hips, he looked around the lawn.
I have to tell you that I'm not sure what is going on. I really wanted those monster cookies. Hart said she'd have them. What time is it?
About 2, I think.
Oh, that's the reason.
Clayton wasn't sure whether Levi was worried about the girl or just annoyed that she wasn't working in the kitchen. Though she sounded like such a young, needy thing, he reckoned that her father's worry was probably justified. He was just about to offer to help Levi search the grounds when a woman appeared at the end of the driveway. As she came closer, he was aware of two things. Hart Beachy was no wayward child, not even close. Secondly, Hart was the prettiest thing he'd ever seen in his life. She had light blonde hair, a slim figure, a lovely face, and bright blue eyes. It was everything he could do not to gape.
Is that your daughter?
He asked, just to be sure.
Yeah, that there is Hart.
Levi frowned.
I don't know what she's carrying, though.
Realizing that the two of them were standing there staring at Hart, when she could likely use a hand, Clayton started forward.
May I help you carry that? He called out.
Her eyes widened. Are you my father's guest?
I am. Well, I'm here because I'm Levi's new apprentice.
When she continued to stare at him, he smiled slightly.
My name is Clayton. Clayton Glick. And you're Hart?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I came out to help you, yet here I am still watching you carry that cage.
He held out his hands. It's all right, you don't have to carry it. I've gotten this far on my own.
It's my pleasure.
Gazing into the container, he was stunned to see a rather rotund white rat inside. It was staring at him intently, as if it was trying to measure Clayton's worth. It was one of the strangest things he'd encountered that week. Well, that, the fact that Levi spoke in half-sentences, and learning that Levi Beachy had a beautiful daughter who'd named herself Hart. He gestured to the rodent.
So, what is this?
This is Spike.
He looks like a rat.
That's because he is. Her lips pressed together.
Is he your pet?
Maybe she went for walks with the cage?
It sounded unlikely, but he was beginning to think that anything was possible on this farm.
He is now.
Hart, I went inside, but you weren't there, her father called out.
Staring at her dad, Hart released a long, rather drawn-out sigh. Take Spike for me, please. She handed Clayton the cage and then squared her shoulders as if she was walking into battle. I'd better go get this over with. When she started forward, Clayton fell into...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?